Welcome to the Denver City Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, host with you today, coming to you from the Denver Merchandise Market. We are about to open up the conference of the year. This is the Rocky Mountain Super Family Conference on the Family. And friends, this is it. You've got to come down to this conference if you're anywhere near Denver, Colorado. And today we've got good news and bad news when it comes to Christians in the marketplace of ideas. We're going to start with the bad news and hit the good news towards the end.
That's a good thing.
That'll leave everybody in an optimistic frame of mind. But here's a New York Times article, and we knew this one was coming. For those evangelical Christians still surviving in the college scene today, more and more persecution for them. Boy, this is amazing, Steve. They're not even allowed to meet in clubs as they used to. Now, when we were at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, there were a number of evangelical clubs. We had opportunities to preach on campus. We were able to invite people to open-air preaching services, and a lot of people came to know Christ during the early 1980s at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. It's sort of a little revival that happened on the college campus. And of course, the college campuses have offered something of a venue for Campus Crusade, InterVarsity, and Navigators, and many other ministries that have done significant discipleship at a very, very important turning point in the lives of a lot of young people. In fact, a fair percentage of our congregation, I think, are made up of those who have been converted on college campuses by campus ministries, including my own wife. So, hey, you know, and I think the homeschooling movement itself would never have existed had it not been for the discipleship that was done on college campuses in the 1960s and 1970s. It's my theory that many of these who got serious about their faith on college campuses in the 1970s, 1980s became the nub of the family discipleship movement of the 1980s and 1990s to the present day. So I don't think any of this would exist that we are working with today had it not been for discipleship on the campuses. Wherever there's discipleship going on, whether it's college campus or whether it's in the home, it's a very healthy element to the Church of Christ in the 21st century. People aren't going to get saved. They're not going to get discipled in large revival services where it's nothing but emotion, people biting the carpet, coming forward and giving their life for Jesus in 20 seconds or less. It's going to happen where there's ongoing discipleship happening, and much of that happened on the college campuses. Now, I made a big deal out of that because the secularists are wanting to turn a corner on this. They're coming out full bore, full court press, against Christian influence on the college campuses. The bad guys, the devil understands what's going on, and he doesn't appreciate it very much. And here, again, a New York Times article speaks that for 40 years, evangelicals at Bowdoin College have gathered periodically to study the Bible together, pray, to worship. They are a tiny minority on the liberal arts college campus, but they have been a part of the school's community, gathering in the chapel, the dining center, and the dorms. And I'm going to say they've been gathering for over 200 years because I'm going to refer to Nathaniel Hawthorne in just a moment. He attended Bowdoin College, and of course, it was mandatory that there be preaching on an everyday basis, et cetera, in the 1820s and 1830s when he attended the college. But for the present day, the Bowdoin Christian Fellowship will no longer be recognized by the college. Already the college has disabled electronic key cards for the group's longtime volunteer advisors. They're kicking them off. They're kicking them off the campus. And, of course, that's what's happening as college and higher education becomes increasingly secularized. And that's what happens when you separate sacred knowledge from philosophical knowledge, as Aquinas did. And this form of education has been adopted by the university system all the way back to Cambridge and Oxford into Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, and on to Bowdoin College in the 19th century. Now, of course, it always happens about 100 years later, 150 years later, where sacred knowledge is entirely consumed by philosophical knowledge because sacred knowledge is stupid. And philosophical knowledge is really, really smart, okay? You read all about how that happens in my book, Apostate. In case you're kind of curious how the Christian faith has died in the West, I would encourage you to get a copy of my book, Apostate, available at our website, kevinswanson.com. Anyway, there's a collision between religious freedom and anti-discrimination policies. Student group and its advisors have refused to agree to the college's demand that any student, regardless of his or her religious beliefs, should be able to run for election as leader of any group, including the Christian Association. That's just craziness. That's just craziness that anybody can serve. Let's take a sorority. Take a sorority, for example. Can anybody serve as president of a sorority?
Well, you would hope.
I would think that a woman would be preferred.
Yes.
You follow me? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Anybody thinking? At Cal State, the nation's largest university system with nearly 450,000 students on 23 campuses. And what's important about this, Steve, is I attended at Cal State University. I was student body president of Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and met with 21 other student body presidents on a monthly basis. And I had a fairly important position on the Cal State board appointed by Governor Duke Majian back in the mid-1980s. So I was involved with the 450,000 students on 23 campuses back in the 1980s as student body president of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Well, now the chancellor is preparing this summer to withdraw official recognition from evangelical groups that are refusing to pledge not to discriminate on the basis of religion in the selection of their leaders. Ergo, they're being forced to put a Muslim in charge of their evangelical group. The Muslims are, being forced to. I doubt it. They're being forced.
Yeah, I doubt if the Muslims are being forced to have a Christian lead.
It'd have to be the evangelicals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if a Ku Klux Klaner ran in a,
African American
group. Yeah. I doubt
if
you
have a Nazi leader.
Yeah. 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 You think
Nazis have a Jewish?
You think
leader.
There'd be a little discrimination going on there somewhere?
Yeah. Somewhere.
Yeah. Or let's say you had the rocket science class and. You have the psychology major showing up. Like, forget that. You're out of here, buddy. Okay. Well, I think what's happening is a worldview shift. And the worldview shift is effectively this. We're all polytheists here. This is the polytheistic Cal State University system. And that is, there is no absolute. And we can't even get into discussion as to whether one absolute is more absolute than another. So we can't even get into the issue of debate over absolutes. Rather, the basic worldview position of the university, which, by the way, didn't used to be the Poly University, but now is the Poly University, is that there can be no absolute. There can be no God who is absolute. All of the religions in the pantheon are treated equally, which means what? All ideas are treated equally, which means what? Which means ultimately chaos. But the basic presuppositional framework of the universities today is polytheistic. All gods will be honored in the polytheist temples of America, ergo the public universities. So I think we just need to clear the deck and say these universities are clearly polytheistic and anti-monotheistic, and therefore they represent a false religion at the most basic foundational philosophical level.
Yeah, and so it kind of gives a new definition to Cal Poly. It's more Cal Polytheistic.
Yeah.
So, but what I want to know, I had a patient one time who was belonged to the Church of Christ Scientists, and he said that he and his wife both had different gods. You know, they were able to make up their own gods, and I wanted to actually know if their gods knew each other.
Yeah.
And if they liked each other, because you get back to the Roman and the Greek gods, they, a lot of times didn't like each other.
Well, that's because they were fighting out for preeminence all the time, and nobody was preeminent. And that's actually very handy for people who want to live their lives where they want to, because no god has the final say on ethics.
That's right.
That's what everybody is fighting for, Steve.
Yeah.
Because if you had a god who can overturn everybody else on ethics and establish an absolute, now we are all held to some absolute code. And there is a definition of sin, and now whatever our consciences have been telling us for the last 50 years of our lives is true, and we will face the judgment of this God who has laid out this law and will hold us to ethical responsibility to that law, and that's what they don't want to deal with.
Yeah, just because you don't believe in the God of the Bible doesn't mean you're not going to meet him one day when you die. Yeah, he's still there. He is truth. He is there. He is all existence. And so you can't just deny him out of existence. You will meet up with him one day.
You know, ultimately, Steve, what this means is that Nathaniel Hawthorne's of the world have gained preeminence over the Christian past of every one of these universities. And I think it is ironic that Bowdoin University is kicking the Christians off the campus in the year 2014 when Nathaniel Hawthorne attended this college. Now, Nathaniel Hawthorne is a saint of most Christian literature programs in America, despite the fact that he was one of the most anti-Christian writers of all time.
Yeah.
And even as he attended Bowdoin University, he made it a point to miss the evening prayers, public worship on Sundays, even at the risk of having to pay a small fine for his lapses. I have footnotes in my book on this, by the way. You've got to get my book, Apostate. and read the true story of these great literary giants who are adored and make up the basic curriculum in most Christian high school programs in America. And, you know, and I happen to think that Christian schools and many, many Christian pastors and Christian leaders and Christian teachers are committing suicide when it comes to literature and when it comes to the liberal arts, because they don't understand that they are buying into the agenda of those who have been anti-Christian for 150 years and preparing for the future colleges they serve to be the most anti-Christian colleges possible over the next 100 years or so. So they're preparing the way for this because of guys like Nathaniel Hawthorne. And Nathaniel Hawthorne repudiated family worship, Sabbath keeping. He openly mocked the sermons that spoke of the judgment of God. He ridiculed the pastors who had been trained at the more conservative Andover Theological Seminary and showed up on Sundays to preach at Bowdoin College. Okay, so this is history. He hated the Word of God, the Bible, and the true Christian God. And that was clear throughout the corpus of his writings. And so I'm hoping that people will get a copy of my book, Apostate, and get the whole story on Nathaniel Hawthorne and the history of Bowdoin College, just so you know, just so you get the story on why American colleges are kicking Christians off the campus in 2014. Be back in just a moment with some good news on the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, Steve Vaughn, also here. Hey dads, is it time to get away with your sons to build those relationships? Remember, fruitful relationships is what it takes to have a fruitful life. How you disciple your son has everything to do with the relationship you have with your son. So don't miss a once-in-a-lifetime experience at our father-son retreat at the Crooked Creek Ranch in the Colorado Rockies this August. This year, we will be featuring speakers like Scott Brown, Dan Einerson, Mike Chappa, Steve Vaughn, and yours truly from the Generations Radio program. You'll enjoy outdoor activities, training sessions, including wilderness first aid, mountain survival, blood tracking, as well as sports activities, swimming, high ropes course, rock climbing walls, kayaking, and hiking in the beautiful Colorado Rockies. And we're cutting the price for the 2014 Father-Son Retreat. It all happens August 28th to the 31st at the most fabulous retreat center in the Colorado Rockies. Register today for our Father-Son Retreat at check.org, that's C-H-E-C.org. That's check.org under Check Events on the web. Or call toll-free 877-842-2432. That's 877-842-2432. We're back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson here with you. And Steve, we are battling for whatever little ground we can get, whether it be in academics, politics, culture, whatever. We as Christians are more and more disenfranchised by the system. We're pressed more and more to the nooks and crannies of our cultural systems. And we know this. We're past the denial stage on this. Nevertheless, we're playing full court press on this. Bill Jack and I go back and forth on whether we're playing defense or offense, and we always conclude that a basketball team pretty much has to do both.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Playing basketball, you can't just do defense.
That's right.
Otherwise, you're going to lose. And you can't just do offense. You're just going to lose. You're probably going to have to play offense and defense. And, yeah, it turns out that Christians are terribly disenfranchised in education. One reason why we wind up supporting Christian home education, Christian schools and such all the time. And we're not giving up on this one either. I personally, Steve, I think that the Christian homeschooling movement is going to be 6 million within 10 years from now. I'm almost convinced of this. We've got the Gen 2 survey coming out. The results are coming out in just a little bit. We're going to find out whether or not the first generation of homeschool graduates are going to homeschool their own kids in the next generation. Get out of the way. Lead follower, get out of the way. These people are going to make a difference. Well, okay, so here's the deal. It appears the good guys are coming back. As of a couple of days ago, you saw who won the Virginia primary for Eric Cantor's seat. It was amazing. I mean, this guy he's the majority leader in the House of Representatives. This is the rhino of rhinos in the House of Representatives for the Republican Party. This is the guy. Eric Cantor loses by a whopping 55-44 to some guy.
Yeah, this
Dave
is not
Brat.
A little...
Dave Brat.
Is it Brat or Brat?
Brat. Brat.
I don't know.
Yeah, my dad says, here's my dad. My dad says that the Washington power structure was shocked that the second leading Republican in the House of Representatives was defeated by an unknown conservative in the Virginia primary election yesterday, and not with a very nice name.
Yeah.
Dave Pratt. Yeah. It wasn't like that was helping him on, on the campaign lit. But, man, Cantor outspent him by what? A factor of 25 to 1?
Oh, yeah. It was
5 million, 6 million to a couple hundred thousand.
200,000.
200,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable. That's a 30 to 1 ratio. According to my math, 30 to 1 ratio, this guy is on the roll.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Now, what does this say? What's happening here? I think what's happening is the Tea Party's coming back. I think America is really upset with Congress.
You think?
And I think the conservatives are going to throw the rhinos out.
Yeah.
And the liberals are going to throw the moderates out.
Yeah.
And I think this nation is going to be increasingly divided in the years to come.
Oh, yeah. I think that that's the only way that it can go, because you've got the likes of Harry Reid and Pelosi and all of them leading the liberal side of the party. But I think the Tea Party's getting pretty fed up. And, this proves it right here, because, there have been some top people, like Daschle and others that were defeated, but they were defeated by the other party. Yeah. This is within the party. This is conservative versus rhino, essentially.
Yeah. So this may make 2014 an interesting year, Steve. It could be the conservatives are on the comeback. It's hard for me to believe that in the near future we're going to see much of a comeback for that pendulum shift to the right. But who knows? We need to fight for every edge we can get in the battle. And Oklahoma has reversed Common Core. Do you see that?
Yes, I
did. Another positive.
Yeah.
Wow. Common Core took, 47 states?
Yeah.
Just looking at the map. It just took America.
Yeah.
You also heard that it was Bill Gates that funded it. I didn't realize that. He funded it to the tune of billions of dollars, and he was behind the whole thing, and it was on the roll. He basically bought Common Core in America and brought it to every state. And now Oklahoma is the first state to reverse it. I got this from HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, that is always fighting for family freedoms, trying to decentralize rather than centralize control of education. On June 5th, Governor Mary Fallon signed HB 3399 into law, withdrawing Oklahoma from the Common Core State Standards Initiative and allowing the state to adopt its own public education standards. The new law makes Oklahoma a state to reject CCSSI. Oh, I didn't realize that. Alaska, Texas, Nebraska, Virginia, Minnesota never adopted Common Core, and Indiana and South Carolina have also recently withdrawn from it. So it appears to me that they gained a huge amount of power on this. They got a lot of momentum going. And then people realized it wasn't quite what it was cracked up to be. Now, there's also something of a Babel principle that works all the time.
Yeah.
There's always the power brokers that are working very hard to centralize power. And they centralize, and they centralize. Go to. Let us make a tower and build a city. It's the same thing.
Make a name for ourselves.
And make a name for ourselves. That's the same thing that's happened for 4,000 years. So here, 4,000 years later, they're trying to build a massive centralized control over education. And as we've said many, many times, home education is an all-out effort to decentralize down to the family and down to each individual child, because we don't believe that any child should be held to certain standards on any given year. We should maximize their own individual talents and abilities to what God has given to them, challenge them in some areas in which they're weak, but continue to encourage them and give them the momentum in the areas in which God has blessed them. So, but now you've got these Common Core principles that were foisted upon the nation, and appears the nation is backing off of it. According to this article, eight states have rejected CCSSI.
Yeah, and if you want to learn more about Common Core, we've got Scott Woodruff from HSLDA here at the conference this week, and he's going to be doing a talk called Rotten to the Core, How Common Core is Threatening Homeschooling Freedoms.
How's it doing that? You got a feel for it?
Yeah, because the standards, I mean, they've already changed the ACT and SAT tests.
Right.
And so, our curriculum, when it's non-secular curriculum, so like with math and history and things like that, when you start buying those types of books, if they are catering to Common Core, so like if you Saxon math and things like that, if they're going towards that standard, then you're going to end up having to buy those books.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're going to have to study. If you're going to study for SAT and ACT.
Or if you don't give the secularized Common Core approach to history, science, et cetera, then your children will be disenfranchised when they take the ACT and SAT, be less likely to get into college. And that's the idea, I guess, is
right.
If you tie the whole system into a set of standards of things they need to know about the Civil War, things they need to know about the civil rights movement, things they need to know about the pro-homosexual movement of the last 20 years.
Right.
As you move through these things, you find there many of them are attached to ideological ideas that are not shared by those who homeschool their kids or Christian school their kids and want to inculcate a different worldview. And if you're using a different curriculum, then you're perhaps less likely to do well in the ACT and SAT. Although, usually, here's what happens. What happens is they study through the test.
Yeah.
You give the kid, you know, study tests, and you get them into a course for 3 months, and then they take the ACT and SAT, and they blow it out of the water. So,
right.
You know, we hear that a lot, too. Okay, before I stop the program, we have a few more minutes, Steve, and I want to hit this one because it's important for those who listen to our program. Because a lot of people listening to our program are concerned about the safety of their children and concerned about their children spiritually and physically, both spiritually and physically, being affected by the wrong worldviews and the wrong social interactions in public schools. And that's why these school shootings are important. Boy, we've been getting a lot of them lately. And
wow.
I was thinking, wow, more than usual. And I picked up this Washington Post editorial from Mark Berman online. And sure enough, there's been a slew of them, 74 school shootings since the Newtown Massacre in December 2012. That's a record from what I understand.
Wow.
Now, we did a history of school shootings and found that there were school shootings like one every decade back in the 1800s. Okay?
Yeah.
It's like one every decade because evil people exist.
Right.
I'm here to tell you, you know, here's the bad news. Evil people exist. It's a Grandpa Adam issue.
Yeah.
But, man, we've been getting more of these. A student was shot and killed in a high school outside of Portland, Oregon on Tuesday. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did.
Then comes just 5 days after a student was shot and killed at Seattle Pacific University. And I was at a church conference when that happened, and one of the pastors, his kids were attending there.
Yeah.
And they had some acquaintances that were affected by the shootings at Seattle Pacific. It's shocking. He was weeping as we prayed. For the students up at Seattle Pacific. And that happened just a few days before that. And that was on the heels of a shooting that severely injured a 10-year-old Wisconsin girl on an elementary school playground. Here's a particularly depressing number that highlights just how often school shootings are occurring. And he's got the 74th school shooting just happened since the December of 2012. Fully half of the shootings have occurred so far this year. And it's only the second week of June.
Yeah.
So in other words, it's ramping up. These kids are shooting their classmates at a higher rate than ever before. That list is limited to school shootings where a gun was fired inside a school building or on a school campus. That list does not include times when people brought guns to school, didn't fire them on the school grounds. That list is just focused on school shootings the group finds through media reports. It doesn't include the UC Santa Barbara shootings last month. Remember those?
Yeah.
I think we talked about those. That list does not include shootings at shopping malls, movie theaters, and military installations, on and on and on. Well, here's my take from this, Steve. I don't think psychotropics are holding the floodgates on our crazy society back as much as they used to.
Yeah.
The psychotropics in, what is it, half of Americans on psychotropics? I have a hard time
something like
up
that, yeah.
It's not that high. Okay,
yeah.
Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, 80% of them are taken by the United States. 80% of Ritalin is taken in U.S. schools.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
80% of Ritalin in the world is taken in United States schools. And, yeah, the psychotropics are not holding the floodgates back for our crazy society as much as they used to. And I think these are more reasons to homeschool. Now, homeschooling is not a cure-all. Still got to deal with Adam's sinful nature.
Right.
You ever run into sinful issues between your kids?
Never.
Yeah.
My kids are perfect.
I like to say from time to time, we never had much of a problem with school bullies. I think we did about 4 years ago, and then we disciplined them, and it pretty much took care of it. But, you know, school bullying is something that happens often, and the social systems are breaking down. And it has to do with the fact that society is becoming more and more dysfunctional. The family is dysfunctional, let's face it. Let's face it. A society in which 6% of kids are born outside of wedlock compared to a society in which 42% of kids are born outside of wedlock. Now, that's just one industry. Right, Steve? There's 100 other indices. You know, what percentage of young boys are addicted to pornography? What percentage of young boys are addicted to the violent first-person shooter games and weren't in the 1960s? You follow me? There's 100 possible indices. There's 1,000 factors that have been tweaked in the wrong direction thanks to the media, thanks to the breakdown of social systems, thanks to the breakdown of our ethical systems. Why? Because they took the Ten Commandments off the walls of schools, off the walls of churches.
Which says, thou shalt not kill.
Right, which would have been nice.
Yeah.
Reminds me of a Chuck Colson story that he used to tell. Yeah. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but he was touring through the school, and they were complaining about all the violence. The first thing they said, yeah, we had to take the Ten Commandments down. And they talked, complaining about all the violence, and turned to him and says, what do you think we should do? He says, maybe you should put the Ten Commandments on the wall.
Yeah, I think he said maybe we should put a sign up that says you shouldn't kill people.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other guy said, that's a great idea. Maybe you shouldn't take other people's things.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Which happened to be in the
Ten Commandments.
But the nice thing about homeschooling is that you can wallpaper your house in the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
You can put the Ten Commandments you can teach them about Jesus, who saves us from our sins.
Yes.
That's way beyond Ritalin. You follow me?
Oh,
That's definitely a step up from Ritalin. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
That's better than school psychologists and Ritalin. And that's the worldview we're going to stick with.
I think so. And my kids are doing pretty well. I mean, they know how to read. My son just graduated at the age of 20 from college with a B.S. in business administration.
Congratulations. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So 20 years
old. And
he's
not in a maximum security prison.
He's not.
And he gets along well with his family.
He does.
Okay.
And he takes care of his sister.
Well, there you go. Well,
yes,
there you go. Isn't that about what you want?
Yeah. I think he's doing great. I think he's a great guy.
All right. Well, folks, more reasons to homeschool your children. And check out the Rocky Mountain Family Conference out here at the Denver Merchandise Mart. And the focal point is home education. The focal point is finding ways to reintegrate the family in the area of education. And, of course, give them a worldview. Give them an education based in the fear of God as the beginning of knowledge, something that is not taught in the public schools. Walk into a public school and you ask them, what do they teach as the very beginning, as the foundational truth, as the basic epistemological proposition in their theory of education? You ask them that. You ask them if it's the fear of God. They'll say, no. That's against the law. We could not fear God in this classroom. It has been illegitimized. It has become illegal by the dictate of the Supreme Court of the United States in the 1960s. No, we cannot fear God. We cannot teach the fear of God. We cannot worship God. We cannot give reverence to God in a public school classroom by the dictate of the Supreme Court of the United States. And my answer to that is, if you don't give your children an education based in the fear of God, if you don't train them in character based in the fear of God, you have eliminated the very, very most basic precept in the education of a child. You are giving your child the most dysfunctional form of education possible.
Yes, your child will be discipled. That's just the way it is. Your child will be discipled. The question is, by who?
All right, folks, we're out of time on the Generations Radio broadcast. I hope this has been helpful for you as we return to a biblical perspective on education. You can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. Also, if you have friends and family members that you think ought to tune into this program from time to time, give them our website, kevinswanson.com or generationsradio.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.